This is Self-Work, and I'm Dr. Margaret Rutherford. At Self-Work, we discuss psychological and emotional issues and what you can do about them, whether that's learning self-acceptance, taking action, or seeking therapy or treatment. 8 years ago, I extended the walls of my practice to reach those of you who might already be knowledgeable about mental health treatment, but also to those of you who might say you'd never darken the door of a therapist. And yet, you are here. I'll answer your questions while I invite you to take a few minutes for your own self-work.
Given the kind of prejudice there has been against hypnosis, that people either think it's dangerous or it's silly, it's a stupid stage show trick. So, you know, 88,000 people died of opioid overdoses last year in the United States. We have not yet succeeded in killing anybody with hypnosis. You know, it doesn't happen.
Welcome to this week's edition of Self-Work. The interview today is with Dr. David Spiegel. He's a Stanford psychiatrist and one of the world's most respected and published experts in the field of hypnosis. I thought this would be really interesting for y'all. I haven't talked about hypnosis here, but it's a technique that I have used. But if the word hypnosis makes you think of magicians or Vegas, you know, a lot of people think that. But it's not a sideshow. It's actually the oldest form of Western psychotherapy and a powerful evidence-based treatment for numerous disorders like chronic pain, insomnia, eating disorders, addiction. And Dr. Spiegel himself has treated over 7,000 patients in his career. And what I was so impressed about, I'm not sure how old Dr. Spiegel is, but he said, I couldn't see any more patients. I knew that my time limit was up and there's just not very many hypnotherapists out there. So he created this self-hypnosis app called Reverie, R-E-V-E-R-I. It offers personalized guided sessions that actually mirror the experience of in-person sessions with Dr. Spiegel, and it works because over 90% of users feel an immediate, impactful relief. I really liked David Spiegel. He was incredibly smart, but also very engaging, and I think you're going to be able to hear how much he cares and is trying to help people with this app. And I'm trying it myself now, and I'm going to renew. I got a free week, but guess what? Because you listen to Self-Work, you're actually going to get 2 free weeks if you try it out. Again, it's Reverie, R-E-V-E-R-I, and there'll be a link in the show notes. It's reveriehealth.app.link/self-work. That's reveriehealth.app.link/self-work. But it'll be there right in your show notes, and I think it's really worth a great try. But before we get to my conversation with David, let's hear from AG1. If you're a longtime listener, you might know I've been drinking AG1 for at least 4 years. When I started drinking AG1 daily, I could feel such a difference in my stamina. And when I would forget it on trips, which they have travel packs, so there's no excuse, I'm very aware of that lack of stamina. I recommend AG1 to my family and friends, and even my husband, who usually swears off things like this, has started drinking AG1, and he always tells me, as do my friends who are drinking it, that they feel like they're getting the nutrients their body craves. That's because AG1 is a foundational nutrition supplement that supports your body's universal needs, like gut optimization, stress management, and immune support. Since 2010, AG1 has led the future of foundational nutrition, continuously refining their formula to create a smarter, better way to elevate your baseline health. So get your free 1-year supply of vitamin D3K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/selfwork. That's drinkag1.com/selfwork. I promise you, you're going to feel better. I introduce to you Dr. David Spiegel.
Margaret, hypnosis is something of a genetic illness in my family. Both of my parents were psychiatrists and psychoanalysts. So you'd have some idea what that's like.
Yeah.
And they told me that I was free to be any kind of psychiatrist I wanted to be. And so here I am. And I got, you know, dinner table conversations were interesting.
Of course.
I got to watch him make a movie of a woman who had non-epileptic seizures, and he could bring it on with hypnosis and teach her to control it.
Wow.
And so
that's what I did my dissertation on, interestingly.
Oh, really? Interesting. It's a fascinating area because it's an interesting overlap because about a third of those people actually have real seizures too, but yes, they then elaborate on them and use them to negotiate, things that they can't negotiate verbally. They do it with a seizure. I had a patient who was from a famous wine family in Napa, and the business was being passed from father to his three sons, and they were in a terrible battle, and she was right smack in the middle. They were dragging each other into court. It was horrible. She kept trying to hold the family together by having them come to dinner on Thanksgiving and Christmas, and they would fight and they would all yell at her. She was, you know, and she didn't know how to stop it, and she started having these seizures. And that was sort of a meta-stable solution to the problem because they'd kind of back off and leave her alone
a little
bit.
Yeah, I bet they would. That'll get your attention.
But then her daughter had her first baby, and they would not let her hold the baby because they were afraid she'd have a seizure. And she just, that she couldn't tolerate. She was very hypnotizable. I was able to induce a seizure. I say, you can't stop them, but you can start them. So go back and remember the last time you had a seizure. And she would start to shake in hypnosis. And I said, well, you're going to do this every day. You're going to practice having a seizure so you can make them smaller and smaller and learn to control them.
Fascinating.
And I said, the other thing was a psychotherapeutic move you might have made, which is I said, you know what? There's one way you can teach your father to stop yelling at you, because you call him every day and you keep taking it time and again. Hang up every time he does that. And eventually he'll get the idea that if he wants to talk to his daughter, he better stop attacking you. And gradually so for a long time they didn't talk. And then he called up and he started behaving himself, and she controlled her seizures and she was back holding her granddaughter. So,
it's the kind of story that just gives you. Just the power of the mind is incredible.
Isn't it? It really is remarkable how people can just change the way they think and do things. So the first time I ever had this personal experience was I was on my pediatrics rotation at Children's Hospital in Boston. And the nurse says, Spiegel, your next patient is in status asthmaticus in room 342. And I'm following the sounds of the wheezing down the hall. And there's this pretty 15-year-old redhead, knuckles white, bolt upright in bed, struggling for breath. Mother in the room crying, nurse standing in the room. They had tried subcutaneous epinephrine times twice, too. It didn't work.
Nothing.
And I didn't know what else to do. They were going to start general anesthesia pretty soon and give her steroids. And I said, would you like to learn a breathing exercise? She nodded. And so I got her hypnotized, and I thought, oh my God, we haven't gotten asthma in the course yet. You know, what am I going to say? So I came up with something very subtle and very complicated. I said, each breath you take will be a little deeper and a little easier.
Oh, God. Well, that is complicated.
That is. And within 5 minutes, she's lying back in bed. She's not wheezing anymore. Her knuckles aren't white. Her mother stopped crying. The nurse ran out of the room. The intern came looking for me. And I thought he was going to say, nice job, Spiegel. What did you do?
Yeah.
And instead, he said, the nurse has filed a complaint with the nursing supervisor that you violated Massachusetts law by hypnotizing a minor without parental consent. Now, number one, Massachusetts has a lot of weird laws, but that one is not one of them. And the second thing is her mother was standing right next to me when I did it. So he said, well, you have to stop. And I said, why? He said, it's dangerous. And you know this, Margaret, from using hypnosis. It's a lot of things, but it is not dangerous. It's less dangerous than any of the medications we prescribe.
Sure.
And so I said, as long as she's my patient, I'm not going to tell her anything I know isn't true. So if you want to take me off the case, go ahead and do it. But I'm going to keep doing this. So he stomped off, and there was a council of war with the chief resident and the attending. And on Monday, they came back with a radical idea. They said, let's ask the patient. I don't think they'd ever tried that at Children's Hospital before.
Isn't that amazing?
She'd been hospitalized monthly for 3 months before. She had one subsequent hospitalization, but went on to study to be a respiratory therapist. I thought that anything that could help a patient that much, that fast, you know, right in front of your eyes, violate a non-existent Massachusetts law and frustrate the head nurse had to be worth looking into. So I've been doing it ever since, and I've used it since with about 7,000 people in my career, because you can just see it happening right in front of it. You know, it doesn't always work, but when it does,
yeah,
it's immediate. You know,
probably my most dramatic example of it was a young woman that she had been raped in high school, and her mother had not believed her. And so she came to college, and she, you know, slept with the doors, you know, locked 14 times, and the TV on and the lights on, and couldn't have sex and all this stuff. And sure enough, we did hypnosis, and she said, "I see him." And it, she was talking about her rapist. And I said, "Well, tell him to go away. Tell him to go away." And she did. I said, "Yell at him." Well, David, by damn, she came out of that. She could turn the TV off. She could turn the lights off. She could finally sleep. She got engaged. She had sex. I mean, it was amazing. It was amazing. Yeah.
I've had situations like that too. And it is remarkable that,
like you say, not everybody's like that, but it was incredible.
But it can, the fact that it can happen, that you could help her turn the corner on symptoms that had plagued her for more than a decade, is truly remarkable. And I've had the same kinds of experiences with many patients.
So tell me about Reverie. It's your app, and I have it on my phone. Let's see. I'll show it to people. You don't want to see my husband. There it is. The little purple one.
Yep, little purple there. One down there on the left. One. Yep.
And I've been using it this morning. And so far I love it. So I'm very impressed by it. And I have something that I don't necessarily want to share, but I'm going to try to change, and I'm going to have your help in doing that.
Terrific. I'm glad to do it. And that's exactly what you're doing, is exactly what I want people to do. That is, given the kind of prejudice there has been against hypnosis, that people either think it's dangerous or it's silly, it's a stupid stage show trick. It's
So,
88,000 people died of opioid overdoses last year in the United States. CDC is predicting 111,000. We have not yet succeeded in killing anybody with hypnosis. You know, it doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. And yet, it's underutilized, terribly underutilized. It's the oldest Western conception of a psychotherapy. You know, the first time a talking interaction was thought to help people. And I thought, you know what? I've treated a lot of people. I love doing it. I'm still doing it, but I'm not going to be doing it forever. And so my legacy project is to make it available to anybody who wants it and has a smartphone. And I thought there are so many things we can help people with, help them help themselves.
Sure.
Control pain, manage stress better. Get to sleep, get back to sleep. In fact, I used to worry that it wasn't as good as being in the room with me. And so what we did is we made it interactive. So as you
I was amazed
tell,
by
I'll
that.
Ask you, is your arm floating up? The answer you give changes the next instruction you get. So
that blew me away. I was like, what? Is he here?
Well, I thought, you know, so I thought, is it really, you know, almost as good as being in the office with me? And then I thought, you know what? If you wake up at 3 a.m. and want to get back to sleep, you probably don't want me in your bedroom telling you how to do it, but you've got me on your smartphone. And so I thought, in that way, I can make this available to anyone who needs this kind of help. And it's been very exciting to me to have this team of people who work with me on Reverie and to make learning self-hypnosis available. All hypnosis is really self-hypnosis.
That's what you said. I read I think it was an open letter on World Mental Health Day, and I
That's
made
right.
several notes about that, right. that all hypnosis is self-hypnosis. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm just teaching people how to do what their brain is wired to help them do to varying degrees. Not everyone's hypnotizable, but most people are at least somewhat hypnotizable, and to teach them how to use it better. You know, this 3-pound organ on top of our shoulders is our major evolutionary advantage. It's connected to every part of the body, and yet it doesn't come with a user's manual. So there are things that the brain can do that we may not be fully aware of, just like that woman who you helped her in one session to break this, the hold that this horrifying experience had on her for many, many years. And that is possible for some people. And so I wanted to make it as widely available as I could. So, you know, we've now got 500,000 downloads. And
really? That's fantastic.
Time, you know, 23,000 people using it. And so it makes me feel good to know that while I'm talking to you, I'm helping more patients with hypnosis than I used to in 6 months
sure.
of clinical work.
Sure. You know, the name of my podcast is the Self-Work Podcast, and the little tagline or whatever is, I'm always saying, what can you do about it? I mean, sometimes there's not a whole lot. Sometimes there is something. What do you exactly have control over? And this is why I was so interested in having you on, because this is definitely something that you can do about what's going on in your heart and mind and soul and gut and wherever else it happens to feel.
And brain. Mm-hmm. So it helps the brain control the body, and it helps the brain receive signals from the body, interoception about how the body is feeling. And we have much more ability to control what's going on in our body than we give ourselves credit for. Yeah. So, for example, we did a study once where we got people in first thing in the morning, hadn't eaten anything. They would eat imaginary meals in hypnosis for an hour. We did a gastronomic tour of the Bay Area.
Wow.
One woman, it was so vivid, and this is what's so cool about hypnosis. It was so vivid that after half an hour, she said, let's stop, I'm full, eating imaginary food. We found, and so we put a nasogastric tube down, looked at stomach contents, 89% increase in gastric acid secretion. So just because hypnosis, your brain is eating imaginary food, you're preparing your stomach to digest it. So then we did the opposite. We had them be relaxed, go to a desert island, do anything except food or drink. We got a 39% decrease in gastric acid secretion. Mm-hmm. And so if in hypnosis, you tell people the pain is there, but it won't bother you that much, you turn down activity in the salience network and you reduce the pain. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, if you say the hand that's getting the shocks in this experiment is in circulating ice water, cool, tingling, and numb, you get reduced pain, but now you're reducing it in the somatosensory cortex in the brain. So the point is that a lot of what we experience, pain, stress, anxiety, sadness, has to do with the brain's construction of what the meaning of these signals are. It's not a simple product of the signals. So the strain in pain lies mainly in the brain. The brain is helping you decide how much it hurts. And so that's a tool. That's a tool sure. you can use. So right now you're sitting in a chair. You have sensations from parts of your body touching the chair. Hopefully that was not foremost in your mind. If it was, we could stop the interview now.
No.
So it's natural for the brain to say those signals are there, but they're not important.
Don't pay attention right now.
Mm-hmm. Don't pay attention. And you really don't feel them until you bring attention to it. Mm-hmm. So the brain can do that with pain, with vision, with hearing. I had a wonderful patient the other day who had tinnitus, you know, which was driving.
I have that.
Crazy. Mm-hmm. Oh, do you?
Oh, I do. I've had it all my life. I thought everybody had it. I thought.
Well, it was a side effect of a chemotherapy that did it to her, and for 6 years she was just suffering. It drove her nuts. She just couldn't stand it. Yeah. And she tried all kinds of things, including, you know, electrical stimulation to the ear and all kinds of things didn't work. And she, it turned out, was a scuba diver. And I said, you know, part of the problem is not just the sound that your inner ear is sending to your brain, but how much it irritates you. I can see it. You know, it's frustrating you. It's irritating you.
I tune it out. So I don't know.
Well, that's all right. You can't. She couldn't. And so... how do you tune it out? What do you do to tune it out?
Well, I heard myself say that. Now at night, it's much more difficult. So I sleep with white sound, but during the day, I guess I've had it for so long that I simply really focus on what is in my other senses, not my ears, you know, what am I seeing? What am I, you know, I just have a hyper focus, I think.
Well, that's, you're doing self-hypnosis, as you know, from doing it to other people, and it works. So in her case, She was a scuba diver. So I said, well, we're going diving. So I got her hypnotized. She was quite hypnotizable. And I said, notice two things when you're diving. It's a generally very silent world. Mm-hmm. The only thing you hear is the bubbles from your regulator. And it's a visually beautiful world. So what I want you to do is imagine you're scuba diving. Any sounds you hear will be those bubbles from your breathing. And you'll picture these beautiful fish and coral and other things. And she comes out of it and she said, I can't believe it. I mean, I hear something, but it doesn't bother me. It's, you know, just like what you said. And she started to cry.
Sure.
And then she said, oh, my God, I'm a lawyer. Lawyers don't cry. You don't show weakness. You know, So she was doubly shocked because not only was the tinnitus so much better, but she was crying about it and letting herself feel things. So it was it can suddenly radically change. And so the very thing that freaks people out about hypnosis, you know, the football coach dancing like a ballerina in one of these hypnosis shows, is actually, I mean, I don't like the whole setting of that, but it actually says, it teaches a point, and that is he could try out being different and see what it felt like. Mm-hmm. Now, in that case, I doubt he went to ballet school, but it gives people an opportunity to try out being different and see what it feels like. And that's what happened to your young woman who had been sexually assaulted. That she said, I could try out, number one, being someone who is able to exert some control in a situation where I was helpless and violated. Mm-hmm. But number two, I can try out being different now. I no longer have to be the woman who was raped all the time. And I can allow myself to be an independent, protected, sexually active adult and feel okay about it.
I'm here in Arkansas, and I have to say that there are a lot of people, when I suggest it, kind of look at me like I'm suggesting that they, you know, take all their clothes off and go walk down the University Avenue or something. I mean, it's shocking to them that I would suggest that. And they're like, oh no, that's just too weird.
It's, you know, it's a shame because the very, you know, so-called weirdness of it is actually the remarkable ability that people have sometimes using it. Mm-hmm. To change, to be different. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if they want to take their clothes off and walk down the street, okay, go ahead. But if you want to get over a phobia, if you want to stop smoking, if you want to control your pain, if you want to manage stress better, you can change yourself that way and be a hell of a lot better in a very short time. And so, well, I'm here because I'm determined to change that prejudice about hypnosis.
Well, good for you. I hope some listeners are going, well, what? Okay, let's talk about cyclic sighing.
Yes.
I've tried lots of breath work, and this was a little bit different in that it asked you to, you know, it didn't have you hold, it didn't have you simply filling your lungs to capacity, which I had not ever heard of, and then slowly, breathing it out. And, you know, I've been trying it the last couple of days, and it really is very helpful.
What do you notice? How do you feel it's different when you do it?
What I noticed was that I felt more anchored in a kind of a soft way, not in a hard way, just kind of in a, you know, that kind of way. That's what I felt.
Well, you know, it's interesting, even as you inhaled then, one of the things that fascinates me, people very quickly feel anchored, they feel calm very quickly. And the key thing about cyclic sighing in particular is, yes, you have this full inhale, and everybody says when you're anxious, take a deep breath. It's not that. But then you do this long, slow exhale. And there's something, you know, the sigh is usually a notion of acceptance or resignation. People sigh when they're sad. And it's a way of emotionally accepting things, whether you like them or not. But from a respiration point of view, it's a way of emphasizing the exhale. And that tends to trigger the rest and digest, the parasympathetic activity, because when you exhale, you're compressing your chest. That's how you get the air out. You increase pressure in the chest, the air goes out. And you also are increasing blood return to the heart. So arteries have muscles in the walls, veins don't. And so the thing that moves the blood back to the heart is things like exhalation, which compresses a bit the superior vena cava, the blood flow to the heart increases. And we found that people who practice cyclic sighing just 5 minutes a day for a month have a reduction in their average overall respiratory rate. So through the 24-hour cycle, they breathe less rapidly.
Deeply.
And more deeply. And in general, we breathe too rapidly and too shallowly. You know, the sort of Zen goal is like 6 breaths a minute, and the typical American is like 11 or 12 breaths a minute.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
And so you breathe less efficiently and more rapidly. And if you breathe too rapidly, you blow off too much carbon dioxide. It's actually high carbon dioxide levels that trigger the breathing rather than low oxygen levels. And so if you blow off too much CO2, that's when somebody's having a panic attack in an airplane, you know. What you do is you have them breathe into the paper bag because that increases the CO2 levels. Mm-hmm. And it will trigger, they're not worried about not breathing, it triggers the appropriate respiratory response. So the key thing is that techniques like this can help you breathe more slowly, but also relax your body. And it happens surprisingly quickly, actually.
You also have these sort of, I didn't know what to call them. I have seven realizations, seven, the word tenets, T-E-N-E-T, that's came to mind here. Some of them, all of them I agree with. Some of them but there was one that was kind of new for me, which was focus on what you are for, not what you're against.
Right.
I had not really thought of it that way. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure, Margaret. I'm glad you brought that up. One common phrase among us hypnosis professionals is the worst thing you can tell someone is don't think about purple elephants.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, what's going to happen? And so often we create more trouble than we solve by fighting an impulse. So as an example, you know, and all it does is it focuses your attention more on it. You know, it's like the noisy kid in the classroom, you know, you just pay more attention to him because he's making trouble, not because it's a good thing to invest your attention in. And so, for example, when the way we get people to stop smoking using self-hypnosis is we don't say you won't have the urge. I took my first hypnosis class from Tom Hackett, who was a chair of psychiatry at Mass General, terrific guy. And he said that he was doing the fight the problem thing. So he had a patient lit up a cigarette in his office and said, the hypnotic instruction was your cigarettes will taste like horse shit. And so he lit it up and said, thank you, doctor, and left. And Tom got a frantic call a couple hours later. He said, Dr. Hackett, my house smells terrible. he said, well, are you smoking? He said, no, but I forgot to tell you my wife is smoking.
So
he had to hypnotize him and say, only your cigarette. You know, so it gets silly.
Yeah.
What we teach people to do is focus on, in this case, thinking of your body as if it were your baby.
And that was another point that you made that I thought was extremely interesting.
Would you ever put tar and nicotine-laced air in your baby's lungs? Hell no. Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? Your body's as dependent on you as your baby is. It has to take into it anything you put into it, even if it's damaged by it. It can't tell you in words. It tells you with cough, with phlegm, with all kinds of things that go wrong with it when you're doing that to it. Mm-hmm. So for the three things we have them focus on is, for my body, smoking is a poison. I need my body to live. I owe my body respect and protection. It's nothing about the impulse. We all have all kinds of impulses that we don't act on. And so the desire to smoke is just one more of them. You focus on, and the nice thing about that is that the best way to change behavior is intermittent positive reinforcement.
Yes, yes.
So rather than feeling that you're denying yourself of something, you say, I am becoming a better parent to my own body. And you affiliate with all of those impulses you've had as a parent dealing with a child. You know, if a child is hurt, do you get angry and frustrated with them? No, you soothe them. You give them a hug. You help them feel better. Do the same thing for your own body. It's doing the best it can. You're not focusing on all the terrible things you did. You're focusing on what you're doing now to be a better parent to your own body.
I just think that's such a loving way of approaching it. And rather than this sort of shameful punishing, I've got to stop this. I've tried to stop it before. Nothing's working. You know, it's like, okay, let's approach this from, you know, again, what you're for, not exactly what's behind you, but what's in front of you, right. And what's in the present. I also like use breathing to separate your physical from mental distress. And I, you know, I do think that that is very, very helpful.
Yeah. Our thinking there and the stress relief app in Reverie has you do something that may seem a little counterintuitive because instead of focusing initially on the stressor, we get people in hypnosis to focus on their physical reaction to the stressor. Because typically, something's worrying you, it keeps you up at night, or it just you notice your body reacting to it. You know, so your muscles get tense, you start to sweat, your heart rate goes up a little, you breathe more and more shallowly. Mm-hmm. And then you think, oh my God, this must be really bad, because now you're sensing your body's reaction to it. So you then get more anxious.
Right.
And then your body reacts to that, and it's like a snowball rolling downhill. It just picks up speed. Mm-hmm. So what we try to do is interrupt that, starting with the one thing about a stressor you can immediately do something about. And that is how your body is reacting. So I say the first thing you're going to do is imagine you're floating in a bath, a lake, a hot tub, or floating in space. Just see what that feels like. Each breath out, you feel a little more relaxed and comfortable, your body floating. All right. So now is your body floating? Yes. Then I say, now picture in your mind's eye an imaginary screen. It could be a movie screen or a TV screen or a piece of clear blue sky. Picture a pleasant scene on it. So somewhere you naturally feel good. A beach, floating in a lake, you know, lying in a mountain meadow, whatever it is. And notice how quickly and easily you can use your stored memories and your imagination to help yourself and your body feel better. Now keep your body comfortable and picture on the left side of this screen the thing that is stressing you out, but with the rule that no matter what you see on the screen, you keep your body floating and comfortable. And so we get people to do that. I work with them for that, to do that. And then I say, now on the other side of the screen, picture one thing you can do to deal with the stressor on the left. May not be the best thing or the only thing, but something. And I've never met anybody who couldn't think of something to do. Yeah. And I say, notice how your body's feeling better. You're able to think more clearly and you feel better because you at least have a pathway toward dealing with the problem that you have. Mm-hmm. It may not be the right answer, but it's a start. Mm-hmm. And usually we find with thousands of people using Reverie that on a 10-point scale, they immediately get a 20% reduction in their self-reported level of stress in like 10 minutes.
Yeah, I can already think about some of my folks that I'm going to say, try this out because I think it'll really help you because they carry around this level of stress and anxiety that, and they are on a lot of medications. And so it's and they want to get off, you know, they want to begin to get off those medications because they understand that they have these side effects that they don't like. One last question. What has surprised you about Reverie? Have you gotten feedback that has surprised you?
Oh, I have. I've had lots of people who say that, you know, I had one woman who had smoked for 25 years, didn't even think she wanted to stop, loved it, you know, mm-hmm. didn't care about the health effects. But she thought she'd try it. And the first time she tried it, didn't like it. That night she went home and tried it again. She lit up a cigarette and she said, "Feh, who needs this?" You know, and she stopped. And her friends can't believe it. And she said, "This is some kind of crazy ass voodoo, but you know, I mean that in a good way." You know?
Yeah, exactly.
And what's cool is people surprise themselves. I love that about Reverie. Mm-hmm. I didn't think I could do this, you know. Mm-hmm. And so we had one person who was angry. They had a problem making the thing work on their phone and they were using it for insomnia. And they said, "And I want to tell you why I'm so angry about this." And I said, "Really?" She said, "Because it's the first time I've slept well in 15 years and I want it to work." So I said, "I'll take that." You know? So we have people who are just who really, what I love about it the most is people discover things about themselves that surprise them.
Yes.
They're able to do things they didn't think they could do. And that makes me feel really good that we can help people do that.
Well, I want to say in this, I will have said it in the introduction, but I want to say it too, that with, if you go to Reverie Health, that's reverihealth.com/selfwork, you actually get 2 weeks for free. So that's cool. Double what the app itself offers. So that's really great. You get a chance to try it and see if you can make some of these, you know, quote unquote, mystifying kinds of healing or change yourself. And I'm all for it. I know that the hypnosis has helped some of my patients, and most of them that have tried it have been, I mean, some people just are not very hypnotizable. And so it, but that's usually true. It even helps them anyway, in some way or another.
That's exactly right. It usually takes a little longer. It's a little slower, a little more work, but the kind of people who are not that hypnotizable actually are more used to that anyway. They would rather do things step by step.
Yes.
Whereas a highly hypnotizable people, just tell me what to do and I'll do it.
Yeah.
And so most people can get some benefit from it, but the people who are more hypnotizable can do it faster. And I think it's just such an underutilized resource. And that's what we have packaged into Reverie, that people, you know, sometimes you need a long and slow course of understanding and training to get better. But you know what? Sometimes you don't.
Nope.
Sometimes there are times when you can just shift gears. And now that, you know, there's more and more interest in psychedelics and how they change people's perspectives,
mm-hmm.
You know, there's the dissolution of ego. With hypnosis, it's sort of suspension of ego. No drugs involved. You turn it on, you turn it off. But you can try out what it feels like to be different. If you can reappraise your situation, like this young woman that you helped, you can let go of very constraining problems that have bothered you for a long time and just try out being different.
Yeah.
And sometimes that works. And boy, if that's possible, why not take advantage of it?
You know,
the worst thing that happens for our river users is that a small proportion of them don't get much benefit. Fine. So they haven't lost anything.
Mm-mm.
But the majority of them feel better, get better, do better, learn how to better manage their stress and anxiety and other day-to-day problems. And I think it's just an opportunity for people, and I hope they will take advantage of it.
And your legacy. I love that, too. It's your legacy.
Yeah, well, it is. It is.
Yeah, that's very nice. I know you must have heard how just warm and compassionate David Spiegel is. That came across even through my Zoom screen. And again, I'd suggest giving Reverie a try. I don't get anything from this. I don't earn any money, but I know hypnosis can help. It's amazing how powerful our own self-talk is, because actually all of hypnosis is self-hypnosis, as Dr. Spiegel said. I just finished speaking to a group at UAMS of healthcare workers about perfectly hidden depression. I'd love to speak to your group, whether it's in the medical field or whatever field it's in. If you think it's a fit, and perfectionism and depression would be something that would be a great topic for a group meeting. I can Zoom, I can do whatever. Just email me at askdrmargaret@drmargaretrutherford.com. And of course, Perfectly Hidden Depression, the book, is available anywhere you buy books, but go to an indie store and really give them some support and order Perfectly Hidden Depression. It has now come out in Italian, one of the 8 or 9 languages that the book has now been translated into. Very, very honored by that. Included in the show notes today, too, is our Zazzle link. You can get a hoodie, a coffee cup, whatever you want. And it's a great way and a very appreciated way of supporting self-work. Again, thank you for being here as always. Please take care of yourself, your loved ones, and your community. I'm Dr. Margaret, and this has been Self-Work.